You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of July 25th, 2018, and it's time to go to the dark side.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Alborn.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. How gritty do you like your video games? Is it like orange juice? You like pulp? You like smooth, Sunny D-like video game?
I don't know about you. I don't know about you, but I actually really like pulp in my orange juice.
Yeah, I like a mix. I mean, I don't know. Like, do you chew your orange juice?
You know what I mean? Yeah, I just want to. I want to just gnaw into it. You know, to be honest, I don't really like my games all that gritty. You know, I like.
Well, we have an era for you? this week we are talking about. Well, I guess we're just talking about how dark or how serious or how gritty the general tone of the games we are playing these days. Happen to be, and how that might juxtapose to some of the stuff that's happening in other media. George, you start us off. This was a thought experiment that you introduced to me. Tell everyone what it was.
Well, so basically, I was watching some of the trailers out of San Diego Comic Con, as one does.
Oh, the comic convention.
The comic convention. And as you know, there's a lot of comic book movies, a lot of comic book TV shows. And so I was watching, well, two trailers in particular stood out to me. The first was Shazam, which is a DC film coming up that takes a very different tone than what we've been seeing out of a lot of other DC movies. This is like, it's basically a superhero version of Big. It is. You know, we're like...
He's dancing on a piano.
Yeah, like basically some little kid. I mean, he's not a little kid. I guess he's like in high school or whatever. Yeah. But he's a short, statured fellow.
Yeah.
Gets the powers of Shazam, which I don't know anything about Shazam. I think it means it can dunk. and when he says Shazam, he becomes like a tall, buff, ripped dude.
Right? Yeah.
He basically completely transforms into a different adult. And it has that sort of like funny, like silly tone, which, yeah. You know, if you have seen any of the DC movies, is not at all where DC's going generally with how they're presenting the rest of the universe. In fact, the other trailer out of San Diego Comic-Con that made me think about this topic was the trailer for Titans, which is a live-action version of Teen Titans, which itself is a cartoon. Like, Teen Titans is a very well-loved cartoon series based off of the comic book heroes like Robin and Starfire.
Yeah.
That is fun and silly, and kids love it, and it's very appropriate for the ages of, say, like... 10 to 12, right, is like that target demographic. There's even a cartoon animated film called Teen Titans Go that I think either came out this year or is coming out later this year. Titans, yeah. However, they dropped the teen because now they're adults and they're using very adult language.
Well, I thought it's like they dropped the teen because they're babies.
Oh my God, I wish. Are you kidding me? Titan babies? That'd be great. So Titans is like, you know... It's the classic sort of like faux edgy, like CW style, like I'm thinking like Vampire Diaries.
Yeah.
Show where the main characters are clearly meant to be teenagers. They're all clearly in their 20s and they're all mad.
They're all very attractive Canadian actors.
Yeah, very attractive Canadian actors. And they're all just mad for some reason. Like, they're just always yelling at each other. Like, Robin shows up out of nowhere, and one of the, like, biggest lines that they play up in the Titans trailer is him saying, "Fuck Batman." Like, it's not like Batman is his, like, well, I mean, I guess he is kind of his stepdad in, like, a weird way.
You're not my real dad, Batman.
Yeah, like, it's just this weird, like, unnecessarily, like, dark edginess to it.
Yeah.
And it made me think about how, in the past, we used to have a lot of video games, I think, that were pretty edgy, or sequels that were edgy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, one of the ones that stands out in my mind is the jump between the first Prince of Persia video game, and well, not the very first one, but the sort of reboot, Sands of Time,
Prince of Persia, Sands PlayStation of Time. 2 era,
Sands of Time. But the sequel went like super dark. I think it even had like a metal or like heavy rock.
Yeah, it definitely had a weird nu metal soundtrack
score, right? Yeah. For what was it? Prince of Persia: Two Thrones, Two Shadows.
Yes, but the third one was also something similar to that, but I forget the title of it. But you're right; they went gritty, hardcore, nu metal thrash Prince rather than.
It was. It's so weird. Like even now, thinking about that jump, what the fuck were they thinking? Like, what was that? What was that?
It was
about?
Heady days. It was in the 2000s. We were really angry. I mean, the war had started. It's
that's true. Yeah, you know, we were listening to like Nickelback, I guess.
the grittiest of all bands.
The grittiest of all rock bands. Well, I mean, even Prince of Persia, like he literally had a dark version of himself. It was like a mega prince.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder, I was thinking about it and wondering if we just go in cycles, because I was thinking about E3 and what was showcased this at E3. Yeah, exactly. And in the, you know, in the coming 1 to 2 years, we're looking at Days Gone, which looks like just a 24/7 grit fest.
Well, but I mean, don't you think that Days Gone, I mean, I guess I don't really know how similar it is to say, what was that zombie game where you like, you're a news reporter and you forge weapons with like duct tape and like Elmer's glue?
No, I think Days Gone is way more The Last of Us versus Rising.
Dead Rising. Yeah, that's what it is.
Cause Dead Rising is more of a Quentin Tarantino type of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think The Last of Us 2, like The Last of Us 2 was a big showcase.
Oh, that is, oof. I mean, if you want to name one game that's like gritty, that's it. That is the quintessential modern gritty game. Yeah.
They're bringing back Gears. There's going to be, what's that? You know, the Samurai one. I guess maybe it's not as gritty. It's more just Ghost kind of stylish. But I mean, it's not cartoonish. It's not.
But you know what? I would push back a little bit on some of these, though, and just call them mature, though, right? Mm. Like, it feels like, tonally, something like Prince of Persia to whatevers, or like the Titan show, they're not just dark in the like literal sense. Like, they are also very just visually like dark games.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But like, are they really that? They're not like thematically that dark. They're like violent. They're edgy. Like everyone's wearing eyeliner and stuff. But like it's not. It doesn't have the same in my mind when I think of something like The Last of Us, where there's a darkness to it, but it's maybe or grittiness to it, but it's not dark per se. You know, like it's totally
okay. So you're saying there's the aesthetic consideration of the trappings of something that's serious versus the thematic or narrative underpinnings of it.
Well, I in a weird way, I think that video games have gotten better because they've figured out that the compelling thing about something that's dark isn't just the aesthetics, right? Like, if you want to tell a mature story, you mix the good with the bad. You mix the dark with some of that, the grittiness with some of the touching stuff, right? Like, even in The Last of Us, there are those lighthearted moments when you're just sort of wandering around the city with Ellie, you know, it's not all doom and gloom.
I mean, I think that's the big criticism of most of the DC stuff, where it's relatively humorless.
Yeah,
and that, to be fair, I didn't see Justice League. I mean, maybe there was a couple jokes in there or something. I don't know.
I mean, there's a lot of like attempts at humor, but I mean, it is a film that is, the darkness is punctuated by that. Like every now and then, like those little, you know, moments of mirth, they're coming in between these moments where Superman is like, I'm gonna fucking kill people, you know, or Batman's like, I'm gonna, like, Batman brands people so that they get murdered in prison by other inmates. Like, that's fucked up. That's some like weird dark version of Batman that doesn't feel necessary, whereas like the characters of some of the games that we're talking about, like The Last of Us, they're not they're not like sadistic about it, you know?
There's not a
I don't get the sense necessarily that the game wants us to take pleasure out of the suffering of those characters. Mm-hmm. In a way that, say, actually maybe like the very first Tomb Raider reboot by Crystal Dynamics, mm-hmm. like that was very much a gritty reboot of Lara Croft. I liked the direction that they went, but mm-hmm. I think that marketing was rightly criticized at the time for being just like suffering porn.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a fine line between reinventing something and then just jumping on the bandwagon. I was thinking a lot about this because everyone is writing their think pieces about the 10-year anniversary of The Dark Knight.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And God. In many ways, a lot of this stuff, even now, the DC stuff feels like it's in the shadow of that movie. Mm-hmm. But that movie was powerful because it stood in contrast to a lot of the stuff that had come before it.
Right.
And perhaps, I don't know, I should rewatch that movie, but perhaps watching it again, I wonder how much of my enjoyment of it was because of the contrast, rather than the standalone themes or the actual composition of the film. Yeah.
Do you think that...
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I was wondering about whether or not there was a tendency for sequels to be darker than the previous entries in either film or games, right? Like, The Dark Knight was dark, but I don't know if it was as dark as, say, like some of the subsequent DC films in the
tone. I mean, I think that goes back to your point of, is it just a movie with people doing mean things in it, or is it saying something philosophically about about what Batman is? Because looking back on it now, it's even weirder because Batman basically justifies mass surveillance as a trade-off of safety, which is in many ways a more societally disturbing thing than just beating people up.
It's interesting that you did mention the war, and that's coming around like a similar time period. Yep. Like, I think there's very much this like post 9/11 interpretation in The Dark Knight that you can't really get away from.
Yeah.
I wonder though if some of the shift in tone in today's video games is partially like that was exhausting, or maybe conversely, like the reason we're having Titans be so dark on TV now, right, is because we're living in a Trump era and shows are turned around faster, whereas some of the dark, some of the lighter games that came out this year and last year were initially thought up and developed in the what is now seems like a sunny era of the Obama administration. Yeah. Is that too much of a stretch?
I think it's just factually true that games take a while, but I also think that I think that those two mediums are on different cycles, because there was a time in the during the kind of Bush and late stage Bush era where, remember all those Call of Duty games? I mean, got each one of them got more extreme and more violent. Remember in Black Ops when he put glass inside that dude's mouth and then punched his mouth?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, those games got comical, like almost to the point of Mortal Kombat-esque escapades on people's faces.
Where you like shoot Fidel Castro in the face when he's with a prostitute?
I think there is a cycle of escalation when it comes to extreme drama that at a certain point loops back around to, okay, well, now we're going to make Overwatch, which is super, which is rainbow bright and colorful, because we have gotten so exhausted with all of the, Call of Duties of the world.
Well, two questions on that point, though. One, do you think that some of the reasons we have the flow of, or cycles, as you describe it, of like grittiness and non-grittiness is just a way to just aesthetically differentiate these games? Like some of those Call of Duty games and, Battlefield games, like they start to feel very similar. And so when a game comes out that stands out aesthetically, something like Overwatch, something like Persona, like we are in an era where you can differentiate yourself from the competitors in the game space by going with a really stylish aesthetic and still have the mechanics be something that people are familiar with, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think a good example would be comparing Fortnite to PUBG. Like, I think there's a lot of reasons why Fortnite is performing so well relative to PUBG, in no small part because it's free to play. But do you think that Fortnite would be doing as well as it is today if it wasn't aesthetically accessible to kids 8 to 12? No way.
Yeah, that's a good point. And plus, it's different too. I mean, even just how it comes across, all the various dances and stuff, as stupid as they are.
I mean, they have the flossing dance in Shazam.
That's true. That was when I knew we must stop Fortnite at all times.
this show is for me. Where's our Shazam to just fight the evil menace that is Fortnite?
It's just it has started to infect broader media, so we must stop it.
You know, we would probably get the most downloads if we did a podcast exclusively, like, reviewing Fortnite. Oh, just change it. This is now a Fortnite podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks for coming, everybody.
The weekly Fortnite. It's the weekly Fortnite is what we're calling it. And it's just about us being bad at it.
The weekly Fortnite, man. That's just like, ugh. It hurts me because it should be like, what, 20 days? How much is a Fortnite? 2 weeks? 20 days?
2 weeks, yeah. That's why it's a clever play on words. I'm already workshopping this.
Yeah.
Are you playing right now that are, I mean, I guess what games are you playing right now that make you that tie into this arc? Like, where are we in the cycle?
I think we're in the lighthearted era, you know, like I'm playing Hollow Knight, but it doesn't, I mean, it's a dark game. It's very Dark Souls-esque, but it's still, there's still a charm to it because all of the characters are bugs. You know?
Cute, adorable bugs.
Or like, I've been playing Jurassic World Evolution, and that's just like, let's have fun, like, farming dinosaurs. Here we go, you know?
And there is one could see a way where you could make a Jurassic Park game that was very serious about itself in a way where it's almost a horror game or it's a survival game or something.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, even in the marketing, like you can imagine a game that really leaned on like, oh, you're overseeing the park at nighttime and there's heavy storms and everyone's dying. Like, it's not really about that. It's about the fantasy of raising dinosaurs. And I think that's even how Jurassic World Evolution marketed itself, right?
Yeah.
Or even something like, so I think a good one to look at would be God of War. Like, would you call God of War gritty? Would you call it dark?
I mean, it's pretty gritty.
I mean, you do stab people in the face with an axe, I guess.
And there's constant dirt everywhere. I mean, there's just just kind of grimy. I guess maybe you're right though, because all of the various lands are highly different. You go to the Elven Kingdom and you do all that stuff.
That's a great point. Yeah,
it's not incessant, but I mean, there's a lot of serious themes in it.
Well, but there's also like a lot of humor and fairy tale elements in it, right? Like you've got the giant snake, you've got like Mimir, the talking head that's like always telling these cool stories and stuff. Like, I would almost argue that God of War, the only reason God of War is dark and gritty as much as it is because Kratos brings that into that world in a way, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I know that there's a lot of, like, other background lore about all this, like, Norse mythology, and they've been killing each other and fighting each other and being total assholes for, you know, millennia or whatever, but a lot of the, like, violence is just, like, Kratos being super violent and being super gritty and, you know what I mean? But, like, the fantasy of the realm and the way that, like, the art is shown or, like, the music, it doesn't feel like it revels in it. Like, it doesn't want, you know, we even talked about it in the debrief. Like, this isn't a world in which Kratos is enjoying the pain that he's causing, you know? And, like, that, I think that aspect of it is an important way to differentiate it from some of the other just like dark for darkness's sake.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like one of the more extreme seasons of 24.
I mean, yes, that's exactly. Or like, didn't Jack and Daxter have a secret, like Jack 2, he had like a gun or something?
I forget which one it was, but yes, there was one where I think Jack was kidnapped or something. And they like did some experiments on him. Like it went very strange.
Jack Bauer ended up in Jack and Daxter. It was like a weird crossover. It was great.
You had to play the game for 24 hours straight or else your save would be deleted.
Well, so like my other question, right, is I'm wondering if that cycle is pronounced or exists in games, partially because there's a sense of having to up the stakes with sequels. And we know how much games are constantly in this like race of recognition, right? Like,
yeah.
Call of Duty, every Call of Duty has to be darker and more intense than the last with crazier set pieces, right? Like Prince of Persia, The Two Thrones was going up against Sands of Time. Like, how do you outclass that? And I think sometimes it's easier to just say bigger enemies, darker enemies, more violence, more stakes. Like, everything is a greater stake as opposed to toning it down and saying, like, we actually don't need that as much, you know?
Yeah.
I'm wondering if there's something to the fact that games have to have that, like, narrative and aesthetic, but also the mechanical, like, upping the stakes that makes it a darker experience.
And something that almost requires an escalation where... Because my understanding of Justice League, the movie, was that it was heavily edited and reshot after the criticism of some of the other DC movies.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they had to... Well, I think Joss Whedon came on board, right?
Yeah.
To try to, like, fix some of the dialogue. And I'm pretty sure all of those jokes that you may have heard about were probably something that he inserted.
Yeah. I mean, I think there is something to the fact that you have to pay attention to the escalation of themes and also the escalation of complexity or depth of mechanics, unless you're just going to continue to make the same, you know, whatever. What are those games that you have to fight, like, 1,000 samurai?
Dynasty Warriors?
Yeah, unless you're going to keep making Dynasty Warriors games, you know, which essentially...
They definitely will. Isn't, like, that Zelda game a Dynasty Warriors game?
Yeah. I mean, I think there is something in that there's this dual escalation that happens that can lead to further, it leads to more extremes in both areas. There are ways, like, there are, I can think of some examples. I mean, the example that I think about a lot is the Legend of Zelda series, where
it
drastically goes like all over the place, where you could have
that's a great
Wind
example.
Waker to Twilight Princess, weirdly.
Or like Spirit Tracks.
Yeah, and then the next Zelda game after Twilight Princess is Spirit Tracks. You know, I mean, it's just kind of, they're more willing to just jump around the place aesthetically and thematically.
Yeah. Although, I mean, surely Twilight Princess is one of the most, I don't know, what's a nice way of saying it, like, contentious entries into the franchise, right?
Yeah.
Overwhelmingly, people like Spirit Tracks and they like Wind Waker, and it holds up aesthetically in a way that Twilight Princess can't.
Well, I mean, I think that's what the benefit of where we are now. I mean, I feel like very few games have aged as well as Wind Waker, both just straight up aesthetically and also in the critical discourse. I mean, all people now really enjoy Wind Waker in a way that I feel like it actually perhaps didn't receive when it was out.
Yeah. I mean, in a weird way, I think video games are just better than movies and television.
We called it. They're better, period. Well, that's it.
We win, guys. Called it. Sorry, Ebert, or whatever. Sorry, you're dead. I'm sorry.
He doesn't care anymore. He's got the last laugh.
That's true. That's a very good point. But, I mean, in a way, you know, we're in an era now where, like, there are countless Marvel movies. There are countless DC movies. There are, like, gritty versions of all of our Marvel heroes on Netflix. Oh, and there's also Marvel CW shows and DC CW shows, and they're just, like, cranking out the franchising, right? There's a new Godzilla trailer out now, and there's a Venom movie coming out soon. It almost feels like video games just have more practice churning out, like, sequels and reboots.
It's interesting, actually.
Than films have had. And I think in this day and age, I just think that generally, like, I can't think of too many games that have come out within the past, say, like, 3 to 5 years that are just dark for no reason, that are just, like, needlessly, boringly dark, at least for ones that are in, like, major franchises, in the way that I think there really was in, like, the late 90s, early aughts.
Yeah. Yes. There was more of a aesthetic to, this thing has to be extreme or crazy, because that's just how extreme gamers are these days.
Exactly, yeah.
Where Xbox, you are playing something like, you know, Hollow Knight or whatever, and Yeah. Or even, I mean, I think the latest Zelda game is a great example of, the latest Zelda game in many ways reminds me of something like Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Oh, I just rewatched that show, by the way. Oh, so good.
It's amazing. And there's, and it's one of those, it's very, it's very light in both color palette and sometimes the themes, but then they use that to juxtapose when things do get serious, and there's just a cohesion to it that means that you can have very serious topics in the same world where you have this wackiness without having to be too extreme, because it all feels like the same type of world.
That's and a I very think, good point, you know, yeah.
Zelda feels the same way, where you have these, you have a tree goblin that shakes its maracas and gives you extra items, and then you have these burned out villages where clearly bad things happened, but it all feels the same without having to turn like a really dark corner and make it, you know, make it thunder and lightning happen.
Or, I mean, even the core story where you were trying to like free the trapped souls of people that you failed and died. Like,
yeah,
it's fucked up. It's a really dark story, but you're right. I think having the ability to walk and that fine line between tones is a strength of Breath of the Wild, for sure. I mean, I think even in a weird way, like, the last Doom game does that. Because while it's aesthetically, like, dark and silly, it plays like a almost like a fun racing game, you know, or like a rhythm game. And I think it does manage to, like, have its cake and eat it, too, in being super dark, but the act of play feeling so playful.
I don't know, I'm hesitant to make such a broad statement, but I really do feel like trying to make your work accessible to a wide age range, so something like Avatar that is appropriate for children but also resonates for pretty much anyone of all ages, I mean, if done right, it's, I think those are some of my most favorite things, where, you know, Zelda is pretty much age appropriate for most people out there. One of my favorite series of all time, another comic piece of Comic-Con news, they're finally doing Blu-rays of Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, yeah.
Which to this day I contend is the best representation of Batman, period. And it was made for, you know, older children, basically, you know, ages, whatever, 8 to 15.
Yeah.
But it had themes of, you know, abuse, of alcoholism, of gambling, of just pure Bruce Wayne going insane over the course of the series. I mean, it's, but they had to do it in such a way that it wasn't extreme in the way that those DC movies are, you know, rated R or PG-13 extreme.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally. And so you have to just, you know, be more cognizant about what you're doing and what you're including, that, whether you're including something for shock value or a thematic reason.
Yeah. I also feel like maybe consumers and maybe even journalists are just getting better at not falling for it. You know,
that, like, yes. Yeah.
Especially because it's also that is a tone or a tactic that is now saturating film and television. I think it's, people are just better equipped going, wait a second, that's just bullshit. Or like, no, that doesn't work. No, you haven't justified some of the tone that you're doing here. Or some of the like darker scenes or moments aren't earned. And when you're called out for that, like, you are rightly dragged for it.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. It's not that people are desensitized to it. It's that people are smarter about recognizing it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I like to think so. Maybe that's just an optimistic reading of the internet, but...
But, I mean, I think there's something to that, because if you see stuff for, you know, if you see gritty versions of superheroes for 10-plus years, you start to suss out which ones have substance behind it and which ones are just there to, you know, try to surprise you or try to shock you.
Right, exactly. And, you know, say what you will about the Marvel movies, if you're not a big fan of them, like, whatever, but those do try to walk that line. Some with more success than others, but, you know, you look at even the first Thor movie, and that's like a comedy fish out of water story. Like, it doesn't take itself super seriously.
Yeah. Thor's actually a good example, because I feel like it's done the Prince of Persia path.
Yeah, where it was, like, super dark and then lightened up, or...
Yeah, and then I haven't watched the latest one yet, but the latest one has a bunch of weird 1980s psychedelic.
Oh yeah, it is
poster
so
art
good.
And stuff.
Yeah, Thor Ragnarok is like all played for laughs. It is just, I mean, that is basically a comedy and really colorful, like a wonderfully lit film. Yeah.
And but still in service of something that is part of a bigger story that, you know, has implications for the various threads in the Marvel universe. It's not just a throwaway. I think that sort of it's, you're probably right in that they have to make so many of those movies that they just now have to cycle through those themes and also just have to get better about choosing which series to balance and you know which ones to dedicate what sorts of tones to. Right.
I think another good example is actually Spider-Man, because there were like, what was it, Spider-Man 3, when he had like literally an emo phase?
Oh yeah.
Oh god, it was. I mean, I'm not even kidding. That was one of the worst 10 minutes of my life I've spent in a movie theater. Like I could not believe what I was seeing put to film. It was so outlandish, right? And now we're in an era where like Spider-Man Homecoming recaptured some of what makes Spider-Man fun and entertaining, which is like he is a nerdy kid that is not cool, you know, and doesn't think he's super cool. In fact, he suffers from like a debilitating sense of like a lack of self-worth, you know, despite the fact that he's a hero. And that struggle to be a hero is what so much of this story is about. And I think it's no coincidence that the new Spider-Man video game is also coming out in the era and maintains that same tone and is using it, it seems at least, to the same effect, right? Like, that game does not look dark. Like, this is not, what is that really dark game where you're, like, a mutant in New York and you, like, turn into, like, black ink and kill, like, a ton of people?
Oh, it was called...
Open World Game.
Yes. It came out juxtaposed against another open world game where you were electricity guy.
Oh yeah. It came out against Infamous. God.
No, Infamous. You're right. Syndicate or something.
I think that sounds right. Either way,
it wasn't that. I know what you're talking about though.
Either way, both of those games were dark as hell and needlessly, like especially that one, like needlessly violent, open world. I'm gonna go to New York and fucking murk everybody. Spider-Man is that same basic concept, right? Yeah. Like the most fun about whatever the game is, we can't remember because clearly it didn't make that big of an impression. The best part about that game was traveling and traversing the world because you felt like Spider-Man through maneuvering the world, right?
Yeah.
To have a video game now that captures that movement but doesn't just wash out the entire film with just like blood and gore is so much more promising. Yeah. And I think it's being rewarded with people's attention at that game. I mean, it also helps that the studio behind it is very talented, unlike some of the past Spider-Man games that have been phoned in. But I think tonally...
How dare you talk about Neversoft in that fucking tone.
I think tonally, like, this new Spider-Man game is potentially one of the best opportunities we have of getting a good Spider-Man game. And I think partly that's due to the fact that as a franchise, thematically... it's improved.
Yes. They've gotten more sure-handed with the popular original tone of Spider-Man.
Right.
Before we end, do you want to know what that game's name was?
Oh, yeah, please.
Prototype.
That sounds like Syndicate. What's funny is I actually played both prototypes, and I actually think I liked the first one. The second one is darker. Because there's two, right?
Yeah, there's a second prototype.
Before we end, I have one question. Mm. Are there any games out that you think would benefit from a darker tone? Like a dark reboot version? Because I have one for you. How about this? Splatoon.
Okay, pitch me. Oh, my God.
what if all of the ink quids, like, what if, like, black ink... You know what I mean? Or like blood, like just really dark. They start firing
like
real bullets.
Just like black and red ink, just the most extreme type of ink.
Yeah.
And when you get hit by it, it actually turns you into an octopus.
Well, I mean, we've already established that Inkopolis is set in the post-apocalyptic far future of our own world.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Let's see. I mean, there's lore. There's lore in the game that suggests that.
I would love to see a game where like it turns out that the way that Squid Kids first... came into existence was like an alien. They just burst out of the chest of humans.
Or that's actually the story of the ultimate story of Fallout. Eventually, people just mutate into Squid Kids, set up a society.
That's definitely... Actually, you know what? That is a... Yeah, that's actually another good one, too. Fallout's kind of lighthearted. Compared to, like, Fallout 2.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think one game that I am currently playing that has an interesting mixture that I would actually be interested in them doing more with it is Octopath Traveler. There's definitely some stuff in that game in the later... Or in the characters that I'm now unlocking, and then the subsequent chapters of those characters, where they're like many JRPGs, they're just going full force with whatever themes they want to. The aesthetics of the world be damned.
I mean, this is literally why people play JRPGs.
Yeah, but I think that stuff in an era where you don't really have to censor them anymore for an American audience is kind of cool, because a lot of that stuff was cleaned up in the 90s and the early 2000s. And some of that stuff, I appreciate, even if I don't really always like the story all that much as a story, I appreciate what they are going for and what they are willing to put on the screen.
Yeah.
Even though it's kind of silly and it's these like small, like, you know, weird chibi characters talking about, you know, slavery and prostitution and stuff. It's like, man, this game got dark fast.
I think the tonal shifts that like Japanese storytelling has done over the years in everything from like, you know, crazy weeb anime where it's just like super hyper fun and then someone just like explodes in viscera for like no reason. Or like, what's the popular Netflix show, like Agrakuro? The aggressive office, like that stuff, it's so playful with that like shift in tone, right? Like,
yeah,
I think that's something that Japan has excelled at actually over the years.
Well, we're interested in we're interested in your gritty reboots. Maybe we're in for a Katamari one, just crushing bones and sinew under that Katamari ball.
That's a great idea. You could be the skeleton ball from Dark Souls.
just go around the world, just causing chaos and wrapping up people as they scream. Instead of the lighthearted King of the Cosmos lounge song behind it, just hear the agonized screams of your victims.
Or both. I mean, why not? You know, have the help me, help me. That would actually be really funny to like redo that trailer of just people screaming.
Just dub it.
Yeah.
experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address,
and experiencepoints.net is our Gothamopolis. Come on down, find us wherever you happen to find podcasts, and give us a review and tell your friends.
Cool. All right, everyone, thank you for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao. Every time we